All right, thank you all for joining our December 10th MTS board meeting. I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Aguirre. Arambula. Campbell. Fletcher.
Fletcher here.
Frank.
Here.
Galvez.
Here.
Goble.
Here.
Hall.
Here.
Montgomery.
Here.
Moreno.
Here.
Salas. Sankey.
Here.
Sotelo Solis.
Sotelo Solis here.
Weber.
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you for that. We'll move to agenda item two. I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the November 12th, 2020 meeting. Is there a second?
Second, Sankey.
We have a motion and a second. Any comments, questions, concerns? With that, all in favor of approval of the minutes, say aye.
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 Any no's? That motion carries. We'll now move to public comments. I'll ask the clerk if we have any requests for non-agendized public comment for today's meeting.
We have no public comments.
Thank you. If there's no objection from board members, I'm going to change the item. We have a few board members who I think are going to have to leave a little bit early. I'm going to take the consent calendar after we do the fixed bus route service. This is one of the largest contracts we awarded MTS. Executive committee spent a considerable amount of time on this. And I want to make sure we hold everyone here to get input and feedback. And so we'll jump to agenda item 30. We'll do 30, 31, and then we will come back and do consent calendar and then go into closed session. So with that, I will turn it over to Sharon Cooney for our fixed bus route service contract award presentation.
Thank you, Chair Fletcher, and good morning, Board of Directors. Today we are going to be offering to you probably the largest contract that you will ever have to approve here at MTS. It's also one of the most important. This is for our fixed route bus service. It's half of the service that we operate within the county. Staff is not taking this lightly. We've spent a lot of effort and time trying to make sure that we get this right. And what we're bringing to you today is a package that we believe is really what's in the best interest of our passengers, our community, and I really do believe that the board will want to award this contract when we're finished providing you with the thorough presentation you'll have today. With that, I'm gonna turn it over to the people who will be offering you the presentation. Mike Wigan, our Chief Operating Officer of Bus, will begin. He will be followed with Sam Elmer, our Manager of Procurement. And finally, Larry Marinisi, our Chief Financial Officer. We want to make sure that you have every opportunity to understand the contract, and then we'll be taking questions at the end. Thank you, and with that, Mike.
Thank you, Sharon. Can everyone hear me okay?
Loud and clear.
All right, perfect. Well, good morning, Mr. Fletcher, Chair Fletcher, members of the board, and thank you, Sharon, so much for that intro. As she did mention, it has been a long process. Some of us have been working on this for about a year and a half, but it is very important, and we take it pretty serious, and we're excited to offer to you for your consideration what I think is a very competitive and a proposal that really meets a lot of our service needs and really meets all the expectations of what we expect to provide to the region. So a little bit of history, just kind of background on bus in general. This is inclusive of in-house and contracted operations. I think a lot of you know most of this information, but just as a summary, we operate over a 570 square mile area. We serve a lot of the cities, obviously La Mesa and El Cajon and Santee and Poway, but also the county. And we do this through five separate operating divisions throughout the service area, and we operate just over 21 million miles of revenue each year. We do this with a large plethora of unionized employees, both in-house and contracted, and we do it with nearly 900 vehicles on the rubber wheel fleet side. A lot of the background of why we contract it out, and it provides us a lot of flexibility It has some efficiencies, but our public utilities code really outlines the requirement to provide public service in our region. The RFP process that we do for this outsourcing really, you know, has a lot of detail and requirements in it, specifically, you know, wage order protection, some statutory requirements as we go through the process, and the RFP process meets or exceed the FTA standards. But again, you know, we do a lot of work in-house, and I'll go through some of that, but when we contract it out, it does provide us a little bit of a flexibility for expansion or reduction of service, and of course, it's a risk limitation comes with that component. So this slide right here is a kind of a breakdown. It's basically a 50-50 split for the most part between in-house and contracted. We do have a little bit that goes currently to First Transit for our minibus service, but what you can see in this slide is the breakdown. MTS, you know, it when you look at the different levels of service and how we provide it, it should all look the same. It should all feel the same. We expect the same high level of service from our in-house as we see on our contracted side. We provide a high level of oversight, both not only for our in-house, but our contracted. So it really, to the customer, should not look any different. It should be the same high level that we expect across the board. So a little background on the current contract. The current contract started July 1st of 2015. It does end on June 30th of 2021, thus the presentation today. Currently, Transdev is the incumbent provider, and they operate that service out of South Bay and our East County divisions in Chula Vista and El Cajon. They operate 52 of our routes out of nearly 100 total routes in the system, and about 10 and a half of those 21 plus million miles that we operate of revenue service are currently operated by Transdev. They do it with over 330 buses. They're all compressed natural gas. They do have some articulated buses, and then they operate the commuter service. There are 750 represented employees. We have multiple different collective bargaining agreements, but with two separate unions, the ATU and the Teamsters, throughout those two divisions. You know, some highlights that we've had in the current contract. We launched the South Bay Rapid with the Transnet program. That was very successful. We've opened two brand new maintenance and operations facilities. Both the East County and the South Bay divisions are brand new facilities, state of the art, really top notch. Our regional transportation management system, our RTMS, has been installed on 100% of the fleet while we've been in this contract with Transdev's help. DriveCam, it's an additional layer of oversight that we have on the vehicles. We have a complete camera system on every vehicle already, but this is an additional system that provides a little more proactive safety approach and gives us real-time information. They've had very successful CHP inspections during the contract term, 100% or no out-of-service vehicles, or what we call a perfect inspection. They recently got their new articulated buses as part of the Rapid. That was their first 27 articulated buses as part of their contract. And they've been huge in our ZEB program. Right now we have a couple ZEB vehicles deployed at the East County facility, and we're working on our South Bay facility. It's going to be the first scalable infrastructure as part of our ZEB program. So they've been key in that. So before I, you know, this slide, I'm basically going to turn over to Sam, but, you know, he's going to go through some of the contract procurement process. But as I mentioned, with the contract ending on June 30th, we're now in a position where we have to give you a proposal for the next 10 years, hopefully. Sam?
Thank you, Mike. And, yeah, part of that reason why we're coming so early for this contract is to allow any potential bidder to transition from the current operator. If we were to select somebody else, we needed a six-month transition period for any new operator to come in. We did issue the request for proposals in January 22nd of 2020, and we received three proposals on the due date, one from Transdev, Keolis North America, and First Transit, Inc. All proposals were first reviewed by the procurement staff, and all proposals were determined to be responsible and responsive. Then we turned those proposals over to the evaluation committee, which was comprised of members from the contract operations division, bus administration, the planning department, and the finance department for their evaluation. Additionally, we had folks from the safety, maintenance, and customer service departments review the proposals and look for those assistance, technical assistance that they could provide for those specific sections of the proposal process. The proposals were evaluated with the following criteria. The first being just the firm's qualifications, their experience, and the experience of the key personnel. Then we looked at the technical capacity and how they're going to handle the scope of work as we presented it to them in the RFP, and their training and innovation plan. Each proposer was given a 10% bidder's preference if they committed to hiring the existing workforce, and all three of the proposers selected that option, and they all received the 10% credit. After the initial score and evaluation, it was ranked as follows. Transdev was ranked number one, First Transit number two, and Keolis number three. Then staff, through the process, asked for additional clarifications both on their technical proposal and on their score. And after the review of those responses, the ranking remained the same, one, two, three, in order there. After we looked at the technical and cost clarifications, staff determined that Keolis was no longer in the competitive range. So then we asked for a best and final offer from both First Transit and Transdev. Transdev was who the panel selected to engage with negotiations, and the emphasis of our negotiations was on overhead and profit. Now I'll turn it to Larry to go over the budget impact of the contract.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Fletcher, members of the board. We wanted to go over what the budgetary impacts of this contract. As we had mentioned previously, this is a total of a 10-year contract, base period being 6 years with 2 two-year options. When we take a look at the base period, it's just under $500 million for those 6 years. When you incorporate the two option periods, total of 4 years, gives you a total contract for 10 years of just under $900 million. The following two lines are pass-through costs, the first being a performance bonus program. So if Transdev achieves certain milestones, they're eligible for certain bonuses. So those would be pass-through costs to them. And then there are other additional pass-through costs, which Mike Weigant will go over a little bit later in this presentation, but primarily focused around engines and transmission rebuilds, as well as midlife battery replacements for battery electric buses. When we add all that up together, it's about a $911 million contract. In terms of the negotiation process and really the whole proposal, we were able to reduce costs by about $67.5 million over that 10-year period, which is about 7% from the original Transdev proposal. Transdev is 2.6% lower than the next highest proposer, which equates to about $24.4 million over that 10-year period. So when we take a look at the details of the cost proposal, it's structured a little bit differently than the current contract, where we're breaking out fixed costs separate from variable costs. And the reason we wanted to do this is we didn't want to penalize nor provide a benefit to contractors based upon any fluctuations in mileage as it relates to fixed costs. So we did break those out into a fixed variable cost structure. The cost does incorporate all new collective bargaining agreement negotiated wages. So when we take a look at some of the cost details, year one costs total about $72.9 million, which is about a 13.5% increase over the current contract. And what this represents is really the full impact of right-sizing the contract, primarily as it relates to minimum wage effects. So when we look at the turn of the calendar year, there's going to be another change in minimum wage, and then the following calendar year as well. That is one of the drivers in that first year increase. And secondly, Mike Weigant will get into it a little bit later in the presentation, but it also includes additional staff as compared to the existing contract. We did do an analysis as compared to our independent cost estimate, and this contract is lower than the updated independent cost estimate. And when we look at years 2 through 10, the subsequent 9 years after year one, the cost per mile increases on average about 3%, which we believe is fair and reasonable. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Mike Weigand.
Thanks, Larry. So as Larry and Sam had mentioned, the evaluation team narrowed down their selection to Transdev. So I'll give you a little bit of history with Transdev. They are, of course, our incumbent contractor. They are the largest provider of contracted services in North America, and they provide not only bus service, but they have paratransit and rail service along with taxi service throughout the country. You know, they have a diverse workforce that really represents the area that they serve. They are the incumbent. We have a nearly three-decade partnership with Transdev. Some of the new contract terms, as we had mentioned, is a six-year base contract with two option years at our discretion, or two additional units of 2 years for a total of 10. It is truly a turnkey proposal as part of the contract terms, but there are some requirements for MTS to continue to provide. Some of that is for efficiency purposes, and a lot of it is you know, just so we have control of the operation. You know, we would provide the operating facilities and, of course, the infrastructure out in the region as far as transit centers and whatnot. We have full control of the service design and the schedules. We provide the fuel and the fueling infrastructure, whether it be for natural gas or for electric or maybe even one day hydrogen. The buses, we still maintain all of the design and the purchasing process for all the vehicles. So in essence, once they're ready for service, we turn them over to Transdev. And from there, it's a turnkey. They have all the maintenance requirements from there. And as we've mentioned a couple of times, some major component replacements, and these are high-end consumables that have some risk associated with them, engines and transmissions. We have our own contracts, so we have an economy of scale locally here that we use on our in-house. So if there's an engine or a transmission that has reached the end of its useful life, I'm not talking about just regular everyday repairs, you know, oil leaks or anything associated with general maintenance. That would all be Transdev's responsibility. But in the event the engine meets our criteria, and we approve that, and the engine would need to be replaced or rebuilt, that's a pass-through to us, along with transmissions. And built into the contract is also the midlife for battery electric buses for their batteries. But the rest of the maintenance associated with the battery electric or even a hydrogen vehicle falls on Transdev's responsibility. And we also pay the utilities at all of the facilities. The new contract, they do operate about half, 52 of nearly 100 of our total routes. And as I mentioned before, about half of the revenue miles are 10.5. And again, it's a turnkey. So they provide all the, you know, direct supervision, all the parts, the materials, the operators, all the training. They do also provide all of the non-revenue vehicles as part of their responsibilities of the contract, and of course the supervision and the relief operators necessary. They also, as part of the contract, have a pretty significant component for bus stop maintenance and facility landscaping, not only on the operating facilities, but also out in our service area at transit centers, to include some power washing responsibilities throughout the region. Some of the things I just mentioned, of course, the building responsibilities for both operating divisions. It's turnkey, janitorial, landscaping, all of the preventative maintenance requirements, not only from the FTA, but our contract requirements to maintain a high level of a state of good repair at those facilities is all Transdev's responsibility. They conduct all of the training required not only for operators, but for maintenance, even inclusive of battery electric technology. They submit all of those plans to keep that, to complete that, and we provide oversight for that and approval for each one of those plans to make sure it meets our standards. They provide standby coverage in the region, not only for their service, but also they can assist if we have a you know, an issue out on the street and we need additional resources, and it allows for an expedited response time, we will use Transdev for our in-house operations and vice versa. They provide trolley bridging needs when necessary. for any work being done on the trolley where we'd have an outage or if there was an unfortunate incident that required a bridge, and any special event support. Transdev is a partner also with us. And again, we provide a pretty significant amount of oversight to them. We expect the same high level of performance. The contract standards meet our own or even exceed our own standards. And we do that with a pretty robust team. There's more than seven people. It's their full-time job to provide day-to-day oversight. A lot of the reporting requirements, we get the data before Transdev gets it. We really do have a pulse on the operation, and it's led by Mike Daney, our manager of contract ops and passenger facilities. In the contract, there, of course, are some incentives when they exceed our minimum requirements, and we really hope that they do. So we have some carrots and some sticks in the contracts, like with most. And then there's liquidated damages if they don't meet those expectations, and there's a damage to the agency or its reputation. Those incentive programs are really based on, of course, our KPIs, on-time performance, safety, and customer service. But we really try to promote them to go over and above. And it's a balancing point, but we want to make sure they're reasonable, but they have to maintain our high level of standards. And of course, the LDs are focused on when they don't. Some of the new enhancements, and this is where we start to get into some of the information of why Transdev was separated from some of the other proposers. You know, they really did meet a lot of our, they met all of our expectations, but in a lot of cases they exceeded it. We really expect from our in-house and contracted departments the same goals. Like I mentioned earlier, it should look the same, it should feel the same, the passengers shouldn't know any difference. And this is where they really started to set their proposal aside from some of the other competitors. They have a dedicated positions, additional positions for safety manager and training manager and the revenue manager, the quality control managers for a radio communication team. So we have one centralized dispatching facility where we can see live how Transdev and in-house operations is performing. And so they have an additional layer of oversight there. And out in the field, in the service area, they proposed additional road soups and road leads to maintain that level of service. So also included in the contract are some new incentives or new projects with the agency or with the district, excuse me, with the agency as we move forward. As I mentioned, the battery electric bus and the integration of all the facility improvements, that's already built into the contract that they'll work with us as our partners as we go through that. The Iris Rapid in late 2022, they're part of that. They'll be operating that. That's already built into it. Our new next gen system that will be our next gen fare system that we'll be implementing next fall. They have lots of responsibilities as far as testing and training and implementation and installation. The Bus on Shoulder or the BOSS program, which we're already working with them through the installation on all the vehicles, that's been complete, and we're just working on, or the county's working on the construction on the freeways to support that program, but Transdev's got a big part of that. They're also installing, as part of their proposal, a turn-by-turn system to help operators throughout the region, more real-time information. Transdev also has a new Employee Connect system that really helps the operators and the employees throughout their organization stay in touch with what's going on each day and really improves the communication. DriveCam, I mentioned that before, that's that additional layer of camera system on the vehicles, but it actually provides live data. It also has a lot of analytics that help them manage the operators and proactively find when they're not maybe driving as safely as they would expect or require, and so they can proactively get to them before there's an incident. You know, with Transdev, the evaluation team picked out a lot of things that really led us to this recommendation. You know, they really have a lot of things that are going to help with the transition, not just because they're an incumbent, but they are the only proposer that is basically using the same scheduling system we have, so there's a seamless integration with that. I mentioned a couple times the additional support they have in the region for oversight and supervision plans. It's a much higher level of coverage that was in our RFP, and also and it's higher than what our the other proposers provided, and some of that real-time information that I had mentioned before. So, you know, when you look at the RFP process, we really have to narrow it down. Why did we pick TransDev? You know, the service, again, needs to look the same, feel the same. We have the same expectations, but really what pulled them away from the other proposers? You know, why does the evaluation team feel that they're the best overall value for MTS? And it really, you know, there was a few areas that really stood out. They really had a clear understanding of the scope of work. There was minimal concerns that they could operate it as the way we expect through the RFP. They have multiple innovative safety and oversight strategies. Again, the highly experienced local team, several of them have been in our region operating a portion of our service or been part of our MTS family for more than 20 years. The additional staff that we see in the region, and they had, as you saw from Sam and Larry's presentation, the best overall technical score throughout the RFP process and the lowest overall cost. So with this, staff brings to you their recommendation that the Board of Directors authorize the Chief Executive Officer to execute MTS Docket B0708.0-20 in the amount of $911,362,781 with TransDev for the provision of fixed route express and bus rapid transit bus services, again turnkey, for a 6-year base period with 2 option year terms to be exercised at the CEO's discretion. So with that, I will turn it back over to Chair Fletcher and for any questions.
Thank you. Thank you for that presentation. Sharon, do we have someone from TransDev on?
Yes, we do. Laura Hendricks, CEO of TransDev North America. Laura, are you on?
Yes. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Well, good morning, board and our MTS partners. I'm Laura Hendricks, and I'm proud to be the CEO of TransDev, who has been honored to be a long-term partner with MTS for many years. The trust and teamwork between our two organizations on a daily basis has been truly remarkable. Your staff has been very diligent, as well as fair in ensuring contract adherence to our current contract and through the entire RFP process. We have submitted a very competitive proposal to MTS, and we're very excited to be recommended to continue as your partner, and I'm honored to speak with you today. We are proud of the service our team provides each day with our diverse workforce that represents the communities that we serve. This new agreement will ensure a smooth transition, a high level of performance, competitive wages, and protection for all the employees who currently support this contract. It's also important to note that we have worked very closely together, both TransDev and MTS, through the uncharted waters of the pandemic this year, truly demonstrating the collaboration and, I think most important, aligned in with regards to protection of the health and safety of our people and the public as we work together to continue providing service during COVID-19. I also want to take this opportunity to thank the board for recognizing TransDev's essential workers and employees during this trying time by providing them with a bonus this summer. And on behalf of TransDev, we sincerely appreciate the opportunity to continue our partnership for the next 10 years. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Executive Committee had the advantage of spending a considerable amount of time on this, but I want to open it up to any board member questions or comments that they would like to raise, if there are any. Councilmember Hall, and then we will go to, I believe, Councilmember Moreno.
Yeah, I was just trying to find out, are you planning on upgrading your buses at all for East County? Because I think we've had a few complaints about the bus service there. if she's there.
Yeah, this is Mike Wygant. Absolutely. We have a very robust fleet replacement program. We're actually just starting to take delivery of the new commuter, CNG commuter vehicles now. I believe five of them have basically been delivered and accepted and may even hit the street before the first of the year. We also have, I think, 38 additional replacement CNGs for our 40-foots, and I think a percentage of them are heading that way relatively soon, I would say by summer. And also, I believe, two battery electric buses were recently deployed to there. So they're clearly in our program. What was that, sir?
I was just wanting to make sure they're heading east. So that was the good point about it. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Councilor. Good. Councilmember Moreno.
Thank you for the presentation. I do have a few questions. As was stated, this is a 10-year contract worth almost $1 billion. So I wanted to take a step back and ask more just fundamental questions to better understand how and why MTS contracts out some of its transit services, but not others. Has MTS staff conducted a cost comparison between the cost of transit service providers provided by contractors, versus the cost of service provided by public employees through San Diego Transit? And if so, how do our in-house costs compare with the contractor's cost?
Thank you, Councilmember. That's an excellent question, and we've always done that analysis ourselves. So I'm going to have Larry Marinisi talk to you about that.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Moreno. We did do that analysis. We always do this whenever we engage in any significant contract like this. And the costs are less expensive by the tune of about 25% overall in terms of what the total cost to operate would be going to an outsourced position rather than internalizing those services.
Okay. And so here's why, thank you for that answer, by the way. Why are only some of our transit routes contracted out? The staff report makes it clear that this contract covers bus services in South and East County for the most part. Why are these routes contracted out, but other routes continue to be serviced by San Diego Transit?
Yeah, this is Mike Wygant. A lot of that is chosen based on the location of those two facilities that they operate out of. We try to keep contracted operations in each individual division, and in this case, we're talking about South Bay and East County. Mm-hmm. And so the routes are chosen primarily for deadheading purposes and efficiency purposes based on their location surrounding those operating facilities. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and if you don't mind my adding to that, you know, the reason we do contract out some of our service is because we want to create some flexibility. We also want to be cost effective, but we also need to make sure that we balance out risk. So it's really challenging for an agency the size of ours to take on all of that risk. Bus operations inherently have a risk with it, because they're out in the community. And they carry a lot of passengers. So that's kind of just a judicious way of balancing that. We do have limitations on how much we can contract out. There was a bill that was passed by then Assemblywoman Kehoe years ago that prohibits us from contracting out our internal operations and our routes without first negotiating with our union in order to get their buy-in. So we actually have done that a number of times when we found that it was more helpful to us. We could create efficiencies or improve performance on a route. We have actually gone ahead and negotiated with the unions in order to swap routes. The other thing that we have to always worry about is how much capacity for new buses and new routes we have at each of the divisions. And that's something that the union has always recognized. We can't just keep adding more and more buses to the existing divisions that they're operating out of. So those are a lot of the reasons. And sorry, I was so long-winded.
No. I'm sure the executive committee got to hear all this, and I appreciate everybody answering the questions that I had. And I will support this motion. And if you need somebody to make a motion, I'm not sure if there is one on the floor. I'm happy to make one. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Councilmember Renner, for the questions and for the motion. I'm happy to second it. We're going to continue discussion, make sure we get through everyone's questions. But we do have a motion and a second. Are there any additional board member comments or questions? Mr. Goble.
Thank you, Chair Fletcher. I'm pleased to see staff has really scrubbed this contract. As we look at the year-to-year increases, as we go up from year 2 to 10, the year-to-year increases actually decrease from 4.2% all the way down to 2.9% on a year-to-year basis. So I think that's a very good forecasting and scrubbing of the numbers. I think a question that a person on the street might ask is, the selection committee was made up of the ops, admin, planning, and finance things, and those are the voting members, I should say. Also, members of the committee that were not voting members in a technical advisory role were the maintenance, safety, and customer service departments. Can staff provide some comfort to the public that these departments' viewpoints were definitely included in the selection process?
Yes, sir. This is Mike Weigand again. Absolutely. They get a kind of a deeper dive. That's their area of expertise. Like we have a director of maintenance or a superintendent of maintenance who will pick that particular section of the proposals from all of the proposers and really do a deep dive and give us their opinion, the pros and the cons of each proposal. And we do that on the customer service side. The safety manager did a deep dive into the safety proposal of each one. And then they are allowed time to give the evaluation team a proposal or a grading of each one and what the highs and the lows. And then we take that into consideration when we're making our scores for each section. And then some of the evaluation team also, as throughout the years, has moved through those ranks, and they have their expertise in that too. Myself, for instance, my background is maintenance. So we take all that into consideration. But when they're the non-voting members have input, they give that to the whole team so we can all hear it at the same time. That way it's not individual conversations. Absolutely, their input is clearly within the scores.
I think your last statement there is really of most comfort to the public, that those particular non-voting members do get to present to the entire group, not just individual conversations, and that adds integrity to the selection process as far as the voting is concerned. I've got one last question. The contract or the proposal, the staff report, doesn't mention anything about liabilities or changes because these are contractors. Are there any changes in protections, indemnifications, or liabilities to MTS as a result of this contract?
The contract, it does have liability requirements for the provider, and those were not changed through the negotiation process. There are standard indemnity and liability and insurance provisions that are in most of our contracts.
So MTS doesn't face any increased exposure as we go into this new contract?
No. It's the same that we had in the last contract.
And I would also defer, Karen Landers, did you have anything to say about liability associated with the contract? Our general counsel.
Nothing significant. I mean, we've been working with TransDev for the duration of the contract, and our liability risk shifting works well with them. You know, we have a good relationship, and when there are cases that come up involve TransDev operations, it seamlessly gets transferred to TransDev, and they respond in the litigation and to members of the public the same way that MTS does, so they kind of consistently represent our values in the community and how to handle litigation. So we don't have any concerns.
Okay, great. I think it's good to note that we don't have any increased exposures or liabilities as a result of the new contract, and that's good for the public to know as well. Thank you, Chair Fletcher.
Thank you, Councilmember Goble. I appreciate that. Any other board member comments, questions?
Nathan, Sankey. Bill Sankey. Hey, thank you very much. Sir. Appreciate that, Chair. I'm interested in the relationship. I know we've had contract employees with security for a long, long time. This relationship with TransDev has been decades long. What's the relationship between employees of these different organizations within MTS as a whole. I know we have a closed session item related to union negotiations coming up today. I'm assuming that TransDev has those same kind of negotiations. And then our security folks, I don't know if they're union outside of in their own contract. But I'm curious, is there any, not rivalry, is it better to work for TransDev or MTS or within our organization? Is there, I'm assuming we keep a pretty even keel between the different groups, whether you're MTS or TransDev or another contract for another part of our services. But what's that look like internally for us as an organization?
Yeah, so we like to think that our passengers don't notice if it's a TransDev employee driving the bus or if it's one of our own internal MTS employees. We look at them as part of the MTS family. We report, for instance, about COVID cases on for both the contractors and for our own employees. We do not negotiate with their unions. They're represented by the ATU and the Teamsters. We do not interfere with their union negotiations. That's a relationship between their employees and their union representation and the company itself. So, but we do have a very robust contract performance program where we watch how well they're performing. We look at their on-time performance. When you get your performance monitoring reports on a quarterly and annual basis, we always report their stats as well as our own. We report those same stats to the NTD and the federal and state government. We make sure that they're audited the same way as we are. They get the CHP audits, et cetera. And then we really hold our contractors' feet to the fire in the event that they're failing in any of our performance objectives. So it's very robust contract management, and we've been doing it for a number of years, so we've kind of, you know, worked the kinks out over the time. Hopefully that answers.
Sharon, thanks very much. No, that's exactly what I wanted to see, and I think from the outside looking in, it does look like one organization. I think that's the testament to the success of the program. So I will certainly be supporting the motion. And I thank Councilmember Reno for the specific questions that she asked to begin the discussion. I think the public needs to know that side of the story. So I will be supporting the motion.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Councilmember Sankey, any other board questions, comments? All right. I will close out our, Mayor Sotelo-Solis.
Hi there. So Mayor Sotelo-Solis here. One quick question with regards to the dollar amount that we will be approving. And it is, I know that we talked about an additional, I forget what the dollar amount was. It was for the transition between the old contract and the new contract. So if we could, I would love to ask staff to clarify what those, what that initial dollar amount is, and to renew this contract, even though it's the same group that we've been doing business with, what those dollars will be used for. And so that way we can clarify for our taxpayers exactly what it's going to be used for.
We're going to go back to slide 12 here. So the base contract is $899.9 million. I believe that you're referring to the following two lines, which includes the performance bonus program and the additional pass-through costs. So those are,
yes,
those are going to be all incorporated within the total contract amount of $911 million. So when the contract is awarded, it will be awarded for that total contract amount of $911 million. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right. Any other board member comments? So we have a motion and a second. I want to thank the board for the great questions, discussion. This is a significant contract, probably the largest we will ever do as a board. I want to thank the executive committee that likewise had time to dive into this. And a special thank you to all the staff who work really hard to make sure we are being thoughtful, we're being good stewards of the public investment and ensuring that we have a good system in place. And I also want to thank Laura and Transdev for being wonderful partners, for continuing this partnership, for being responsive, for needs to change and adapt and continuing to be flexible with us. But most importantly, for being a partner to meet the needs of the people of San Diego and the MTF service area. So with all of that, we have a motion and a second to approve agenda item 30. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Thank you again to everyone who's worked so hard on this significant investment. Let's go ahead and take agenda item 31. We will knock this out and then we will go back to the consent calendar and work our way through the rest of the agenda. So I'll turn it over for a staff on presentation of state lobbying services contract award.
Just give us, oh, there she is.
Good morning, Chair and board members. I'm Julia Tour, Manager of Government Affairs. I'll be presenting on the State Lobbyist Contract Award today. So MTS's state legislative advocacy efforts are generally made up of three major components. MTS utilizes its direct relationships with its San Diego State Legislative Delegation. San Diego's local state Senate and Assembly member delegation have historically had a great collaborative working relationship with MTS. We also utilize our great relationships we have with our board members. And our staff and board members will often work directly with our local delegation offices on various MTS-related legislative efforts. MTS is also a member of the California Transit Association. CTA is the state association for public transit agencies. And as a member of CTA, MTS receives legislative and advocacy support, including representation of public transit's interests at the state level. And then finally, MTS also utilizes an external state lobbyist contract to assist with other various legislative advocacy efforts. So the purpose of our external state lobbyist contract is to help assist with advocacy efforts, legislation monitoring, representation services at the state level, coordination and communication with state governmental and regulatory agencies, and strategy development to successfully implement MTS's legislative programs. These services complement and fill potential gaps in our other methods of legislative advocacy efforts. On August 28th, MTS released its RFP for state lobbying services. On October 2nd, we received three proposals. The selection committee consisted of representatives from the MTS executive, marketing, and finance departments. And this table illustrates the scores and ranking of each firm, with Watson Hartman ranking as number one. The evaluation committee decided to move forward with requesting a best and final offer from the highest scored proposer. And Watson Hartman submitted a best and final offer of $157,800. So the Watson Hartman proposal includes the principals of the firm, Mark Watts and Audra Hartman. Mark and Audra bring more than 60 years of combined program-based administrative, regulatory, and advocacy experience. In addition to their team, they are also bringing two subcontractors on board, Kiana Valentine with Politico Group and Melissa White, legislative analyst. So Kiana and Melissa bring more than 40 years of combined experience in transportation funding, policy, and general state and local government policy areas. This contract is going to begin on January 1st, 2021, at which point the team will engage in an early action plan to optimize and prepare for the upcoming state legislative session. Watson Hartman will begin with a political analysis and assessment of MTS priorities, challenges, and opportunities in order to be better equipped and prepared for the coming year. Included as an attachment to your agenda item are the team member bios, qualifications, and educational backgrounds. And so between the access and support from Watson Hartman, our strong relationship with our board members and our state legislative delegation, and the California Transit Association, MTS will be well positioned for widespread state legislative advocacy. So with that, today's recommendation is for the MTS Board of Directors to authorize the CEO to execute MTS Doc G2414 with Watson Hartman for the provision of state lobbying services for a 3-year base period and 2 1-year optional terms for a total of 5 years in the amount of $157,800 and exercise each option year at the CEO's discretion. With that, happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Julia. Just a couple quick comments on this. The amount we spend on our state lobbying contract award is pretty small. It is not a significant contract, and that is in part a function of a couple things. One, we are more aligned now with the other large transit agencies in California than perhaps we have been in the past. And so a lot of the lobbying can be done through the transit associations because the large systems tend to have similar interests, similar concerns, and kind of advocate there, and we participate in those. And then the second thing is the unique nature. Some of our board members, several now, are former members of the legislature. Multiple members of the legislature are former members of the MTS board. And so we've always been able to have a little bit of a direct engagement and role. And so when you look at this award, it was considerably, exponentially less costly than some of the other ones, and that is partly due, in fact, to some of the factors I just outlined. So I just wanted to put in context a little bit the decision we're making here. So with that, I would be happy to make a motion to approve and open it up for any questions or comments from board members. Hearing none immediately, is there a second?
I'll pop in with a second and thank the staff for the report and Nathan for your framing of the job we need to do for ourselves as an organization in Sacramento. I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. We have a motion and a second. If there's no board member questions or comments at this time, we will say all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Get them all in there. Any opposed? All right, agenda item 31 passes. We'll now go back to the consent calendar. I'll ask the clerk if there's any requests from the public to pull any items from consent.
There are no public comments.
All right, any board members wish to pull any items or make comments on any items? Okay, hearing none, I will make a motion to approve the consent calendar. Is there a second?
Second. Salas, second.
Thank you, Mayor Salas. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? That motion carries unanimously. We will now go back to our status report update, agenda item 45, and we will knock this out and then we will recess into closed session. This item is just an informational update. There's no board action needed, but we want to provide an update and give folks the opportunity to comment or have questions. I'll turn it over to staff for the presentation.
Good morning. This is Gordon Meyer, the Operating Budget Supervisor at MTS. This morning, I'm going to provide an update on the FY21 operating budget through October 2020, or the first 4 months of the fiscal year. So first off, the typical reminder that the FY21 budget did include projected revenue losses and increased expenses resulting from the pandemic. Based on our initial projection, we projected a $101.6 million structural deficit. Last year, the federal government passed the CARES Act, which was the $25 billion federal stimulus package passed in response to the pandemic. Our share of that is $220 million over multiple fiscal years. And based on the projected deficit of $101.6 million, the FY21 budget included $101.6 million of CARES Act funding to bridge that gap. As you'll see on the upcoming slides, we are projecting favorable budget results through the end of FY21, meaning that we'll need less CARES Act funding this year to balance. which in turn means we'll have more available for out years where the structural deficits are expected to remain significant. So getting into the actual numbers, so first we have our operating revenues. So fare revenue was favorable by $1.98 million through the first 4 months of the fiscal year, which is 14.5% favorable to budget. Fare revenue was unfavorable to the prior year by $17 million, or down 52.2%. Ridership during that same period was unfavorable to the prior year by 17.7 million passengers, or 57.6%. Next, we have our other operating revenue. So here, through October, we were favorable by $719,000, or 13.5%, and that's driven by favorable energy credit revenue as well as favorable rental income. So all in all, our operating revenues through October were favorable by $2.7 million, or 14.3%. Moving on to expenses. So personnel costs were favorable by $4.4 million, or 7.9%. So this was driven by favorable bus and trolley operator wages, as well as San Diego Transit pension contribution costs. So for the operator wages, the actual amount of service that we ended up operating in FY21 was slightly less than what we had initially projected. And then on the San Diego Transit pension contribution side, so when we were developing the FY21 budget, we made some very high-level assumptions of the impact of COVID. And one of those assumptions was an additional $15 million in pension contribution costs as a result of decreased investment returns. However, we had an actuary do that analysis, and the number that they came up with was actually under $7 million, so about less than half of what we had layered in. So we're going to see that favorable trend continue through the end of the fiscal year, at least until we amend the budget here shortly. Next, we have purchase transportation, which is our first transit in our TransDev contracts. So here through April, we were favorable by $3.8 million, or 13.5%. That's really driven by lower passenger volumes for our paratransit service. And then also we have slight favorable results for our normal fixed route service as well because of the lower service miles that we've been operating. Next, we have other outside services, which is favorable by $328,000, or 3.5%. So this was favorable due to lower security costs than anticipated within administration, mainly because we don't have the volume of special events that we typically have, so we've seen a reduction there. Next, we have energy, which was favorable by $292,000, or 2.5%. This was driven by favorable CNG, propane, diesel, and gasoline consumption, partially offset by unfavorable electricity rates. And then lastly, we have other expenses, which were favorable by $170,000. This is due to favorable credit card fees, fare system materials, and travel expenses. So all in all, our operating expenses through October were favorable by a little over $9 million, or 8%. So when we look at those combined, operating revenues were favorable by $2.7 million. Operating expenses were favorable by $9 million. So all in all, through October, we had a favorable net operating variance of $11.7 million. So just a reminder that we have been reforecasting the operating budget on a monthly basis since COVID struck, and I'm not going to go into those specific details now, but just on a very high level, the operating revenues are not expected to remain favorable through the end of the fiscal year, mainly because we're revising the passenger revenue forecast downward by about $8 million based on current trends, and expenses are expected to remain favorable throughout the end of the fiscal year. And all these assumptions will be baked into our mid-year amendment coming up here in a couple months. And then once again, the original budget included an estimate of about $102 million of CARES Act funding in the initial draft. And based on our most recent forecasts, we're now projecting to use about $80 million in CARES Act funding for FY21, which is about 35% of the total. So that concludes the presentation. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. I imagine we'll have a few questions on this. Just heading into it, obviously we face profound uncertainty as a transit agency. We've seen the significant massive impacts on our ridership because of COVID. And we're not sure how long we will be in a state of reduced mixing or transportation or activities surrounding COVID. Obviously, there is hope on the horizon with the vaccine, but we don't know with any certainty what the timeline of the rollout and significant numbers of that will be, nor do we know exactly what people's behavior will be when we come out of COVID. And so we're going to have to, this monthly analysis that is happening has been vital and critical to continue to try to chart our way through these uncharted waters as best we can, constantly reevaluating and questioning what are we seeing now, what adjustments do we need to make, where do we need to go. Obviously, as we head into 21, assuming we come out of COVID and it's safe, you know, we would have a goal to try to get our ridership back to where it was, rebuild our ridership, stabilize our operations, and then begin to look towards the future. I want to commend everyone at MTS that we have managed our budget and our CARES Act funding much more efficiently than many other transit agencies. There are a number of transit agencies that are on the verge of burning through the entirety of their CARES Act funding. There are also a number of agencies that are doing significant layoffs and furloughs, things that we have been able to avoid. And so I would just say as we move forward that the situation remains uncertain, but there is great attention and diligence to trying to navigate and manage our way through and judiciously use the CARES Act funding, hopefully to be able to bridge us through the entirety of COVID experience. And then we'll have to, in a post-COVID world, really do an analysis of what changes have happened in the market of transit and transportation and figure out how we position our agency in the strongest place moving forward. So a lot of uncertainty, a lot of challenges around budgeting. And I just want to commend the team at MTS for their diligent efforts and their flexibility and the ongoing attention to these issues. So happy to open it up at this point for any board member comments or questions. Again, an informational item only, no action that we need to take. All right. Hearing and seeing none, I want to commend again, appreciate the staff presentation, the update. We'll continue to provide regular updates as we head into the new year. With that concludes our agenda items that we have. I don't have any chair's report or update. Sharon, do you have anything for the CEO officer's report?
Yeah, if you don't mind, I wouldn't like to just say a couple words. One, I want to wish everybody a safe and happy holiday season. And, you know, obviously everybody is dealing with this together, but ultimately, I know we're going to come out of this fine. One of the things that is really kind of hard for the staff is that we always do so many things to give back to our riders at this time of year, and we aren't going to be able to do that. But the one thing that we are still doing is our food bank Stuff the Bus event this week. If anybody is interested in looking into that, you can get on our SDMTS website. But it's really gratifying to know that we're able to continue to do at least a little bit to help other people at this time. It's not lost on me that we're essential workers, carrying essential workers to the jobs at the supermarkets. And so it's kind of a great partnership at this time. So I just wanted to give a little plug for that and wish you all again happy and safe holidays. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sharon. I don't believe we have any additional public comment requests. Our next board meeting will be January 21st, 2021. And again, I want to wish all of the public and all the board members the very best holiday season. Please stay home. We are in a very dire situation with COVID. We've gone from 200 cases a day to 2,000 cases a day, tenfold increase, quadrupling of our hospitalization rate. And so we're not, you know, I know how much the holidays mean with all the families gathering. We're not asking folks to give it up forever, just this one holiday. Let's get through the next 3 to 4 weeks. It'll be our toughest, most challenging stretch around COVID. Let's knock this thing back and then get in the process of distributing a vaccine. So everyone stay safe, stay strong. And with that, I ask the board members to adjourn into closed session. We only have a couple items. We should be able to wrap them up. They are important. So thank you, everyone, for your participation. And for board members, I will see you in closed session. Thanks.
Reporting out of closed session for agenda item 24A, closed session conference with labor negotiators regarding two employee organizations. As to the first employee organization, the IBEW Local 465 representing flaggers, the board voted to ratify the tentative agreement on a unanimous vote with 10 members in favor, and council members Arambula, Moreno, Gomez, Montgomery, and Ward absent. As to employee organization, the Transit Enforcement Officers Association, or the TEOA, the board similarly voted to ratify the tentative agreement with a unanimous vote with members, council member Arambula, Moreno, Gomez, Montgomery, and Ward absent. As to closed session item number 24B, closed session conference with legal counsel regarding existing litigation and a government tort claim for Claudia Isabel Hernandez for herself and as a successor in interest to the estate of Angel Zapata Hernandez, the board received a report from legal counsel and no action was taken.
The board meeting is now adjourned.